We're starting at the top of Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, five lines from the top. Today's learning is dedicated in memory of Ani's mother, Ahuva Bat Chana Vashmua. Okay, who was apparently a feminist ahead of her time. Ibayalahu. Amar Yain. So Ibayalahu is always a question that the students ask. Amar Yain Shani Toem Yovel. Mai. So if you say, I'm not going to do it, here the assumption is until the Yovel. So now what do we mean when we say Yovel? Is it, okay, Mai, Shnat Hamishim Kilifne Hamishim? O Kila Achar Hamishim? As do we count the Yovel year as the end, just like we had Shabbat? Shabbat was the end, Rosh Chodesh was the beginning, right? So how do we view the Yovel year? Is it considered the 50th year? Or is it considered the first year of the next cycle? So Tashma, let's learn from here. Detanya, there's a brayta that says, Pluta Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbanan, v'kidashim et shnata hamishim shana. So the Torah says, you should make Kodesh the shnata hamishim shana. So now the brayta asks, shnata hamishim atamone, v'i atamone shnat hamishim ve'achat. Sorry, that's a statement, not a question. Okay? So, Shnat HaChamishim, let's read it again from the beginning now. Shnat HaChamishim HaTamoneh, V'i HaTamoneh, Shnat HaChamishim Ba'achat. Because it says Chamishim Shana, it teaches you that you count the 50th year, and you don't count it, now this doesn't mean 51, it means you don't count it as 50 and as 1. As it's not both considered the 50th, the end of the year, and the first year of the next cycle. Right? Because you would think the Shemitah is going to be every 7 years, right? In this case, you're going to have, the question is, right, you're going to have 2 years, and those of you who know how this works know already that it's only the 50th, and then we start from one again. But there was a question that maybe it already starts the next cycle of 7 years, that Yovel year, and it counts both as the last of the last cycle, but also as the first, so that every 7 years you have Shemitah, because here you don't have Shemitah every 7 years, because you have this break of Yovel, which makes it that there's this extra year that kind of doesn't go here nor there, right? So they say, that's the way it works. You count it as the 50th, and it doesn't count as the first. Mikan amru, Yovel eino ole l'minyan shavua. Okay, the Yovel is not part of the 7 year cycles that we count. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yovel ole l'minyan shavua. Okay, he thinks that it does count. Okay, interestingly enough, for those who didn't realize this, right, you always thought, oh, it's 50, and then we start one again. He actually held that it already started the next 7 year cycle.
You would think he would take the example from Shavuot, because there you have exactly this.
Except that there's no starting over again after Shavuot. In other words, everyone agrees it's the 50th, just like Shavuot is. The whole question is, when we start the next cycle, where do we start it from? Do we start it from this year, or do we start it from the following year? That's really the question. So Amrula the Rabbi Yehuda, Harehu Omer Shesh Shanim Tizrazar Echa, Vein Kanela Chamesh. Right? It doesn't work with the Psukim if you're going to say that, because that year then, that cycle of 7 years, you're not going to have 6 years you work the land, because Yovel, you don't work the land either. It's just like Shemitah. Right, it's got other things in addition to Shemitah, but it has the basis that you can't work the land. So in that first cycle, every time, the first 7 years of the cycle are not going to have what the Pasuk says, which is, you know, sow your field for 6 years. Amar lahem, so he says to him, then, l'divrechem, harehu omer, that according to you, there's also another Pasuk that doesn't work with Yovel. And therefore, his proof is going to be that in the end, the 6 year Shesh Shanim Tizra Zarecha not working out with the Shemitah, with the Yovel cycle of 7 years, shouldn't bother us, because the Torah in general doesn't relate when it talks about Shemitah. It's talking about general Shemitah years, and it's not talking about the Shemitah year of this 7 years of the Yovel, that 7 year cycle. How do we know that? Because it says, so he says, L'divrechem, there's another pasuk that doesn't work out ever with the Yovel. What is it? Harehu omer, I think it's v'asata, 1 second. Mm-hmm. Yeah, v'asata et ha-tvu'a l'shalosh ha-shanim. This is a pasuk about Shemitah, and it says that the land will grow produce for 3 years, even though you're only planting for one. What 3 years are we talking about? So the sixth year that you planted, and that year it'll grow. the seventh year, the Shemitah year, and then the eighth year, before you have a chance to plant, it'll still grow. So that's 3 years. Now, that will never work when it comes to Yovel, because you'll need 4 years. Okay? Harei kan arba. Ela ika l'ukma b'shar shnei shavua. So what do you have to say about that pasuk? It's talking about a regular Shemitah cycle, and not when the Yovel is. When the Yovel is, it's going to be four. But the pasuk was relating to, you know, six out of seven of the Shemitah cycles. And therefore, delay nami ikalukma b'shnar sheh shavua. The question you asked about me, sheh shanim tizra zarecha, I can also answer very easily. Oh, it's talking about regular Shemitah cycles. But yes, there is one Shemitah cycle where it's only going to be 5 years. But you can't ask me a question about that, because we can just say that all these psukim relate to the general Shemitah and not the time when there's Yovel with it. Okay. Ana Pesach Asur. Now we're back to this issue. There was a machloket. Okay, if you look back at the Mishnah for a minute, there was Ara Pesach and there was Lifnei HaPesach, right? Or Lipnei HaPesach, which we weren't sure what that meant. Rabbi Meir said it was Asur Ad Sheyagia, and Rabbi Yossi Omer Asur Ad Sheyetze, right? Lifnei means Lifnei, before. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, Lifnei could mean Lipnei, meaning just before the end of Pesach. Okay, which would mean then until just before the end of Pesach. So, we're going to talk about this machloket a little bit. L'meimra to Rabbi Meir Savar, why don't we say that this is what their machloket is about? Lo ma'ayel inish nafshe l'sveika. Rabbi Yossi Savar, ma'ayel inish nafshe l'sveika. What does that mean? A person, according to, let's say, right, lo ma'ayel inish l'sveika, Rabbi Meir would say that a person would never, okay, it's a little hard to believe, would never make a statement that could potentially be unclear.
Then what is the entire Gemara about?
Exactly. So let's moderate that a little bit. It doesn't mean never, but if he has a way of choosing a term and he uses the term lifnei, which generally means before, then the assumption means he meant before. And he wasn't leaving open the option. He wouldn't use an ambiguous word, okay? A word that could have two different meanings, because then that would just cause confusion. So if he has a, right, if he really meant the end of Pesach, he would have said something more clear. And since he said lifnei, he must have meant before Pesach. We're going to go with the standard assumption of what he meant, because the assumption is he's not going to have said something that generally means one thing, but maybe potentially means something else, and confuse everything. He would generally just go with the basic, right? He would say a term that would be, that would preclude any sort of misunderstanding, okay? Rabbi Yossi says, no, people say things all the time, right? They're not careful about what they say. They could say something that potentially means this, and therefore you have to go l'chumra, right, and say maybe he meant all the way till the end of Pesach, and therefore you have to keep your neder till the end of Pesach. So now they say, now you have to remember the first word the Gemara introduced. The Gemara introduced it with l'meimra. Usually, l'meimra comes to say, is this what you want to say, that that's the basis of their machloket? If you're going to say that, urim inhi, there's a contradiction. Mi sheyeshlo, here's a Tanaitic source. Mi sheyeshlo, by the way, we're going to see, I'm just prefacing, we're going to see a machloket Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Yossi in this case. It's going to have to do with, are you ma'ayel inish nafshe l'sveika or not? And the opinions are going to be flipped. Okay? Mi sheyeshlo shtei kitei banot mishtei nashim. Okay, he's got two wives and two daughters with each wife. Va'amar kidashti et biti hagdola. And he said, I married off my older daughter. Okay, ve'eni yodea im gdola shebigdolot, im gdola shebigtanot, ve'im ktana shebigdolot. She gdola min hagdola shebigtanot. I don't know if you followed that all, but let's go through. If it's the oldest of the oldest, right, assuming there's two that are from the, you know, the, let's say Rachel and Leah, right? So there's two from Leah and two from Rachel, right? So the two from Leah are obviously older than the two from Rachel. So now if he says Gdola, he could have meant the oldest of Leah's daughters, or he could have meant, that's the Gdola Shebigdolot, or the Gdola Shebigtanot, he could have meant the oldest of Rachel's daughters, V'im Ktana Shebigdolot, or it could be the youngest of Leah's daughters, Shehi Gdola Min HaGdola Shebigtanot, because she's still older than Rachel's kids entirely. Okay. So in this case, kulan asurot, divrei Rabbi Meir. You have to assume they're all ishadish, basically. Okay, they're all safek married. Okay, they need a get, basically. Okay, because we don't know which one he married. That's what Rabbi Meir says. Chutz min, except for who? Who's not going to be included? The ksana shebektanot. Obviously, he didn't refer to Rachel's youngest daughter. She can't possibly be the gdola. Rabbi Yossi omer, kulam mutarot, chutz min hagdola shebigdolot. Only the oldest of Leah's daughters is assumed married. Because why? Because lo ma'ayel inish nafsha l'sveka. He would never say a statement like that, my oldest is married, if he didn't really mean the oldest. Because why would he create a situation where it would be unclear, right? He wouldn't want to create a situation where there's lack of clarity. What do I mean when I mean the older, right? Do I mean the oldest, right? He would never say that. So that's Rabbi Yossi, which ends up the flip of what we said before. Because Rabbi Yossi said, Ma'ayel inishnaf shel sveka. Rabbi Meir said, lo ma'ayel inishnaf shel sveka. So Amar Rabbi Chanina, Bar Avdimi, Amara, Muchlefet Hashita. Swap the opinions in our sugya. Okay, don't say that that's it. They actually said the opposite opinion of what appears in our Mishnah. So now they say, V'hatanya, and here's going to be our proof. Okay, now you're going to see why they dafka chose to switch the ones in our Mishnah and not the ones there, right? Because we're obviously wondering, why switch those and not these? So now, what do they say? We have a braita that supports this. Zehaklal, kol shezmano kavua, v'amar ad lifnei, Rabbi Meir omer ad sheyetzev, Rabbi Yossi omer ad sheyagia. If it's something that has a specific time, like Pesach comes out in a specific date. Okay? So if you say ad lifnei, then Rabbi Meir is going to hold, it goes till the end. And Rabbi Yossi is going to hold, it goes to the beginning. Okay? So there you see, they say the flip. Okay, now we're going to get to this kol shezmano kavua and ein zmano kavua in the next Mishnah. Okay, new Mishnah. Ad ha-katsir, ad ha-batsir, ad ha-masik, eino asur ela ad shiagia. Okay? If you do... Right, you say, now what's the issue here? These are things that you don't know exactly when it's going to be, okay, until the harvest. Until the batsir is the harvest of the grapes and the masik is the harvest of the olives. Eino asur ela ad shiagia. You mean until before the harvest. Zehakla. Kol shezmano kavua v'amar ad shiagia, asur ad shiagia. Okay, if it has a set time and you said ad shiagia, then it's asur ad shiagia. Amar ad shiyehe, asur ad shiyetze. This is what we saw in the last Mishnah. If you say ad shiyehe Pesach, it's going to be forbidden till the end of Pesach. But kol she'ein zmano kavua, but if it doesn't have a set time, bein amar ad shiyehe, bein amar ad shiyagia, eino asur ela ad shiyagia. Okay? In this case, whether you say ad shiyehe or you say ad shiyagia, since the time is not clear when it's going to be, we're always going to assume you meant until the time that it comes. Arakayitz is not the summer necessarily, although I assume it relates to the summer, that the summer was the same time that you would do the katsir of the figs. Okay? So arakayitz, which means cutting of the figs. Ad shiyehe hakayitz. Okay, so whether you say arakayitz or ad shiyehe hakayitz, it's going to be the same, right? Because we already said. But now the question is going to be, what is considered the time of the beginning of the harvest of the figs? How do you know it's the time of the beginning of the harvest of the figs? So there's a siman they give. Ad sheyatchilu ha'am lahachnis bekalkalaot. Until people start, now it's unclear exactly what we mean by this, either putting the figs into baskets, right, because that's how they collected them, or bringing the baskets into their houses, which is obviously a bit of a later stage. Ad sheya'avor hakayitz, how do we know when it's over? And this is going to lead us to some interesting things in the Gemara. Ad sheyakpilu hamikzoot. Okay, there's two different interpretations what mikzoot are. Either they're these knives that were foldable knives. Okay, I don't know exactly what foldable, but I guess, you know, sometimes you have these knives that come apart. There's two parts to them. I guess they must have, like, taken them apart and folded them down, or maybe they were attached. What? I guess it could be like a pocket knife. That's true, actually.
That's what they're describing. It has the handle has a groove and it folds into.
Okay, right. So, okay. So, either these knives. Now, what do they do with the figs? They dry them, and after they dry them, they would cut them. They would cut these fig cakes out of it. So, it was either the knives that they used for cutting the figs, and then it would really be a late stage because it's after they dried and after, right, and then they cut them. The other opinion is maybe just a drop before, which is it's the machzalaot, that they, the mats that they dried the figs on, and that's what the mikta'ot are. which I'm pretty sure I remember coming across that word. Yes, I'm pretty sure we had that word, and it was referring to mats.
In modern Hebrew, if you go to a camping store and you want those mats that people sleep that's what they call it.
Miktsuot?
Yeah.
Oh, there you have it. Okay. So, yeah, I remember our reference being mats and not knives, but obviously a lot of the refreshim explained here that it's also knives. What'd you say?
I was thinking also.
What was that?
Checking
the Masechet Shabbat. Shabbat, right. We had mats and, right.
Sukkah also.
Right, and Sukkah. Mm-hmm.
You know what's interesting about this Mishnah is that it must be that it's very clear when the first few, like the olive and the grain.
Right, yes, because they don't even mention, right. It's a good point that they don't even mention that there's any sort of debate about the olives and, you know, when exactly the harvest would begin. Right, it's a good question why figs were different than the other ones. The timing unclear. Okay, Tana. Kilkalash amru, kilkalash al teinim, velo kilkalash al anavim. Okay, there's a braita that says, by the way, when we mean this kilkala and the kayats, we're talking only about figs and not about grapes. Tanya, another braita, hanodir mi pirota kayats, ein asur ela betenim. Right, it's funny. We think of kayats, we think of avatiach, right? In Israel, everything they learn in Gan, you know, it's always avatiach is like the priya kayats. Clearly, the priya kayats for them was the figs. Okay? So if you say pirota kayats, ein asur ela betenim. Rashbag aware anavim bichlal te'inim. Okay, here you see a machloka, and that's why you're probably wondering why were they bringing up anavim? And now you see why, because Rashbag's opinion is that anavim are the same as te'inim. So if you say perot akai, it's anavim are included. My time at the Tanakama, dekasavar te'inim mikatsitsam biyada, anavim lo mikatsitsam biyada. By the way, okay, I didn't mention this, but kaitz, right, means to cut. So that's what they're saying here. The te'enim are miktsitsan biyada, right? They're cut by hand, okay? And therefore, they're called kites because you can break them with your hand. Whereas anavim, you need scissors, right, Sherry? Scissors for your anavim. We didn't make it yesterday to pick them. Rashbag savar anavim nami ki miridadan miktsitsan biyada. Rashbag holds that there are times when grapes can be picked by your hand. Okay, there's a whole difference of opinion about what's this miradadan, whether it's once they start to dry out. In other words, at a certain stage, they basically get, right, anyone who has fruit trees knows that in the beginning, right, they're very attached, and as time goes on and they dry, then they get much less attached, and that's where everybody's fruits fall all over the place. Okay, ad shiavor kaitz, ad shich pelu hamikzot, tana, ad shich pelu rov hamikzot. Okay, now there's a braita that says it means until most of them are folded up. Tana, hukpilu, now once we're talking about hukpilu, rova miksaot, we're going to talk about other things that happen when, also at this stage, other halachot that are relevant. Hukpilu, rova miksaot, mutarot mishum gezel, upturot min hamasrot. Once most of the mats or most of the knives are already put away or folded up, then you can go into somebody's field. The assumption is the season's over. And anything left on their trees, they weren't planning to pick anymore. So you can go into anybody's field, okay? Or mutarot mishum gezel is a good question, right? It doesn't exactly say it's total hefker, but it says if you were to steal it, it would be, right, it would be mutar. It's okay. Mutarot min amasrot. And they're already considered hefker. In any hefker, what do we learn? There's no maser on it. So basically, the status changes at that point, not just in terms of our issue, right, whether you make a neder, but there's all sorts of ramifications that people can come into your field and take your figs, and they're pacha for maser. So now we're going to hear a bunch of stories relating to this. Rebbe v'Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda, iklu lahu atra, they were at a particular place, bizman shuk pelu rova miktsavot, okay, most of them had already been folded up. Rebbe hava ka'achil, so Rebbe went in and started eating figs. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, right? It's so interesting because, right, he was obviously very wealthy. We learned this already. And yet he's picking figs from other people's, you know, you have to, also it says they got to a place, right? He wasn't home. He was somewhere. He saw figs on a tree. He said, oh, they're hefker. I can eat them. So he eats them. Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda lo achil. He didn't eat them. Ata marhon, the balabayit comes. Amar lehu, amai lo achle rabbanan. Why aren't you eating? Huk pulu rova miktsoot too, right? Already it's rova miktsoot. It's hefker. Vafal pichen lo acher Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? He still didn't eat. Now, why not? How do you understand what this guy said, the Balabai? Think he meant it seriously or not? Could be he meant it seriously, like, why aren't you eating? Puli Rava Miksoad. Or it could be he walked outside, he saw Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi eating from his field, and he's thinking, oh my God, this is really uncomfortable. What do I do? Right? So what does he do? He says, oh yeah, it must be Puli Rava Miksoad. Why aren't you eating more? Because he was just uncomfortable, right? So that's what Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm still not going to eat because Kasavari thought, Mishum Sanyut Miltahu to Ka'amar Hadin, Hadin Gavra. Okay, either you could say he was saying it sarcastically, and he really didn't mean, oh, you're coming to eat my food. Really, you know, not so great. Or he didn't want to embarrass them. Because, you know, here they're like caught, the guy walks out, right? And think about it. Nowadays, it's Shemitah. Everyone's stuff is hefker, okay? But you're not going to just walk into someone's backyard, and if you do, you're going to hope they're certainly not going to come out and see you at the moment you're doing it. So, yeah, this guy walks out, and lo and behold, it's Rabbi Yehuda, and I see, and Rabbi Yosi, the son of Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, we're talking, and he just, in order to say, oh, it's okay, you know, but he didn't really mean it. He was just embarrassed, or didn't want to embarrass them. Okay, Rabbi Chama bar Rabbi Chanina, iklalahu atra, okay, also, he came to a place, bizman shuk pulu rova mitzot, hava ka'achil, he was eating, yahiv l'shame, he gave to his shamashi, lo achil, but he wasn't willing to eat. Amar le, echol. Kach amar li, Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yossi, mishum aviv. Okay, that's the same Rabbi Yossi before, which is interesting, right? Or maybe it's not the same Rabbi Yossi, actually. Wonder. I didn't check. Okay, I don't know if it's the same one. But anyway, it would be interesting if it was the same one, because he was the guy who didn't eat, but yet he's saying, you can eat. But I don't know if that's the one, actually. I think it might not be. Hukpulu rava miksoot, mutarot mishum gezel, upturot min amasir. Okay, so he says to Shamash, you can eat. But you see here that not just because you can doesn't mean everybody's willing to, right? Okay, now we're ready for the extreme story. Rabbi Tarfon Eshkechayahu Gavra, Bizman Shuk Pulua Miktsavot. Okay, what does this mean, Eshkechayah? It means Rabbi Tarfon was found by somebody, by this guy, okay, meaning Rabbi Tarfon was eating figs from somebody's tree, somebody's field. The guy sees him, Dekaachil, he was eating. Achte besaka v'shakle. He sticks him in a, he catches him in a sack, okay? He sticks him in a bag, in a satchel, and he picks him up. V'amche l'mishye b'nahara. And he wanted to throw him into the river. Okay? This guy was really angry that he was eating his figs. Amarlo, he says, oilo, okay, it's unclear whether it's, I think, right. Likely, it doesn't even say lo. He just said. In other words, Tarfon, Rabbi Tarfon's in this bag, and what does he say? Oilo le Tarfon shezehor go. Okay? Immediately, I started thinking of the famous Mishnah in Brachot, where it says that b'shachpov kumecha, there's a famous vachloka b'chama b'thila, whether you have to lie down when you say it at night, or whether you can do it any way you want. And b'chama says you have to lie down, and then Rabbi Tarfon does it, right? And he puts himself in sakana, and there's this team, and he lies down in the middle of the road, and they say, you know, kedai hayita l'chuvat z'machan, as you should have gotten killed, basically, because, and I thought of it immediately, because here he almost gets killed. It's almost like a, right, there's some connection there between almost getting killed and almost like this is his payback. So, anyway, what happens? He says, oilo l'tarfon shezehrogo, shamahahu gavra. The guy hears him say this. Okay, that's why it's more likely he just says it, right? Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm getting thrown out. I'm getting killed like this. And the guy hears him and he says, oh my God, this is Rabbi Tarfon in my bag. So what does he do? Shav ke ba'arak. He leaves him and he runs away. Okay? Hit and run. Ama Rabbi Avau vishum Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel. Kol yamav shalotot tzadik. Okay, all the rest of the days of Rabbi Tarfon. Hayamitz te'er al davar zeh. He was upset about this. Well, why was he upset about this? Amar, oili shenishtamashi b'kitcha shel Torah. I can't believe I used the Torah card. You know, I played the Talmid Chacham card to save my life. And basically, like, how could I have used Torah for my own personal benefit? Right? This discomfort. It's actually a fascinating thing to think about, right? And we're going to get into this a little bit more today, which is, if you're a big famous person, or you're a Talmid Chacham, or you're something, right? How much do you let people know who you are, And how much do you just keep quiet about it and, you know, pretend you're just like anybody else and not make a big deal? And if people, you know, find out, they find out. But you don't want to use Torah to make you treat it any differently than anybody else.
Right, but I guess I understand that the flip side, I think, to this would be, in this particular case, is if he hadn't done that, then he knows he's going to die and he hasn't done anything to save life.
Right.
Which,
well, yes. Right. The question is, how much pikuach nefesh really was there? Because obviously pikuach nefesh, anything's allowed, right? The other thing is, he's not saying it wasn't allowed. Well, maybe it was allowed, but he felt uncomfortable. You can also do something that's allowed and yet feel uncomfortable, and maybe that's what's going on here. This whole, I'll let you guys know in a second, but this whole sugya is all about these things are allowed, and yet not everybody's comfortable doing them. And maybe that's what's going on here, that for sure it was allowed for him to do that to save his life. However, maybe he could have come up with some other way to save his life rather than using the Torah card, you know, the Talmud Chacham card.
It's funny, because when you read it, I thought he used the Torah card not in terms of saving his life, but in terms of allowing himself to eat the figs, and he felt badly because he'd created the situation to begin with.
Uh-huh.
Not that he used the Torah card. Because
oh yeah, but that's not Keter Shel Torah though. Keter Shel Torah is like the
right,
glory of Torah, meaning but, your status having to do with Torah. Here.
Right, but he was interpreting
using halacha.
He was using halacha to allow himself to eat the figs when obviously at least somebody wasn't very happy.
Right, right, right. He got himself into a sticky situation because
of the way he interpreted halacha. He interpreted that most people had told, you know.
Right, right. Although right, there's nothing wrong halachically with what he did. That's what's interesting here. That he was just following halacha. You don't say, I use the Keter of Torah, but you could say differently, which is like the Elisha ben Avuya story when the son was going up to do Kibbud Av Va'em and he fell and he died. You know, and you're in the middle of doing a mitzvah, and that, this isn't a mitzvah.
A mitzvah,
this was just keeping halacha. So,
it's a question
yeah.
of anivu,
not that it relates
right?
that.
It's a question
yeah.
of modesty. I mean, I think that's what this is. Not a halacha
mm-hmm.
thing. It's
right.
like ethics, like
yes.
how to behave.
Right.
Because he really could have said, you're killing a person. You know,
right.
I guess that's what
right. He could have tried to get himself out of it some other way.
Right.
So he could have said, you know, why are you killing me for taking your figs? And the halacha says it's okay. Or, you know, gotten into some discussion
yeah.
with the guy.
Because the implication is that if somebody weren't famous, they would definitely have gone in the river.
Right. Exactly.
Which isn't fair.
Right. Which is clearly unfair and inappropriate. You'll see there's a little more to the story.
Well, I was going to
yeah.
also say there's the flip side. But he's not saying anything. He's actually having the other guy do an avera that he's going to then be punished for.
Yes.
As well. So
right. So he used the Keter of Torah to save someone else
that's
from.
That's the situation similar to the one in Bracha where he, you know, they said, oh, he should have died. He put
right.
himself in a.
Well, that's another question, which is, when they say in Brachot he should have died, they're obviously saying it to the extreme, right? No one was going to
yeah.
kill him. And maybe here also. Maybe he wasn't actually going to get killed. Maybe the guy was just trying to teach him a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very unlikely that the guy, because he was taking some figs, is going to, you know, throw him over his shoulder, throw him into the Nahar, and just leave him there to die. So it's unclear, was it really pikuach nefesh or not? Anyway, very interesting discussion here. Okay, we'll get into this a little bit more, and then we'll hear the end of the story. V'amar Rav Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol ha-mishtamesh b'kitra shel Torah ne'ekar min ha'olam. Okay, he says this is a very severe thing to use the Keter of Torah, and you should be uprooted from the world again, like you're worthy of dying, very similar to the Brachot. Kal v'chomer. How do we know? This is a kal v'chomer. Uma bal shetzar, she'nishtamesh b'klei kodesh, she'nasu klei chol, she'ne'emar uba uba pritzim b'chililuha. Okay, let's work backwards. When they came to take the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash in Galut Bavel, Babylonian exile, the Pritzim came in b'chililuha. They were mechalel the Klei Kodesh. So now the Klei Kodesh turned to Klei Chol. Once they turned to Klei Chol, then Balshitzar used these Kelim. Kevan she'partzum nasu Chol. Sorry, I explained that already, right? Since they were the Bawa Pritzim b'chililuha, they turned into Chol. And then Balshitzar, who used these, ne'ekar min ha'olam, dechtiv ba'belelya, katil Balshitzar. Okay? He got killed that night after he used the Klei Kodesh. So if he used the Klei Kodesh, which were really Klei Chol at that point, kal v'chomer, someone who uses Kitra Shel Torah, which is Kodesh, should get killed. Okay? Not exactly a perfect kal v'chomer, but anyway, they use it to prove their point.
I think that.
Yeah.
In, I just went because I just learned this.
Okay.
This
so that smile on your face.
So they said that he counted wrong. He that was also a Hashverosh's fault. He counted.
Right, we had that whole sugya way back. You remember
right,
that?
Counting the seven in
yeah.
the villa.
Yeah, yeah.
And that he misunderstood, so therefore he thought the Nebuah wasn't going to come true, and therefore he.
Right, and then he used the Klei Kodesh.
So he understood that the time period had ended, and therefore he was free. Similarly, Rabbi Tarfon thought the time period
had ended,
okay.
and therefore
so
he was okay.
The story makes
interesting.
Sense.
Ah, yeah, fair. In terms of Baal Shet Zara's miscalculation, although it's not clear Rabbi Tarfon miscalculated here.
Yeah, but he's assuming the season ended.
But he's making an assumption that I can do something based on Yafeh. That's interesting.
So
I like that idea. So with Baal Shet Zara, it was all a confusion at the time, which was some Megillah. Counting the years, and he thought it was all they were supposed to have gone back, and they didn't. And he said, the, right, what was he thought that they were supposed to?
It was 70 the galut. Years, the, when the at what point from the galut, and he counted from the time that Jehoiachin was exiled as opposed to when the mm-hmm. Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. I can't promise that's the calculation, but
right.
there is a miscalculation.
Right. So he's, so Baal Shet Zara, I forgot to look this up, I don't remember now, I'm remembering, he's from later. He's from.
It's Daniel's time.
Okay,
so
it's Daniel's time.
Late,
so he's much later. He thought Shivat Zion was supposed to be, and it was, and there were 70 years, and he calculated from Jehoiachin instead of
right.
from the end.
Exactly.
And then he said, oh, the 70 years are up, and they haven't gone back. It was 58 years, right? That's what I remember.
Right,
it was
right.
58 years later, and he thought it was 70 because he started from the wrong time.
Right.
And then he thought that it was all, they
okay.
clearly aren't going back. This Nebuah is not coming out, and therefore I can use the Klei Kodesh because they're
right.
no longer
so
going to go back.
Either a son or grandson of Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay, so son or grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay. So
yafeh.
So it's all about miscalculating. We're thinking things are mutar when they're not really. Yafeh. It's good. I like that. Okay. Hamishtamesh b'kitra shel Torah, shehu chai v'kayam le'olam, al acha kama v'kama. So that's the enya. So if you're going to mishtamesh b'kitra shel Torah, that's chai v'kayam le'olam. It never loses its kedusha. So al acha kama v'kama. Okay, now we're going to get back to Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon, kevan d'chi achil, d'ukpulu rova mikto'ot havai, Amait Sarea Hugavra. Okay, now is our big question, right? Since he was eating after Hukpalu Rova Mitzvot, so why did this guy, why was he attacking him? Mishum Dahu Habugamvale Anave Kula Shata. There was someone who was stealing grapes from this guy the entire year. Vekevan de Eshkechele Rabbi Tarfon Savar Hainu Deganvan. Okay, he said, ah, I finally found the guy who's been stealing my stuff all year, and he assumed that it was Rabbi Tarfon. Ihachi amaitzir nafshe. So now they're saying, if that's the case, then Rabbi Tarfon was right for saying, I'm Rabbi Tarfon and don't kill me. Right? He was totally legitimate in what he was saying because he really wasn't guilty of anything. So what are the answer? Mishum, there's a really interesting answer. Mishum to Rabbi Tarfon, Ashir Gadol Hava, V'Hava Leila Faiso B'Damim. He didn't have to use that card. He could have used the money card. He could have just said, I'll pay you whatever you want me to pay you, because obviously the guy was upset about money, that he was losing his, right, his Anavim, and he wanted the money back for it, and he should have just paid. The Mefreshim talk about how Anavim are much more expensive than figs, and that's why the guy, you know, it wasn't reasonable for him to expect Rabbi Tarfon to pay him back for all these Anavim. And Rabbi Tarfon should have just said, I'll pay you all the money for all the Anavim and all the figs, you know, all the Tainim, and I'll just buy my way out of it. And since he had an option to buy his way out with money, he didn't have to use the Talmud Chacham card. Anyway, interesting, right? It's something to think about. About whether he needed to, so he might have been very wealthy, but just needed to spend all his money on something he didn't do either. Anyway, it's an interesting question, but that's what they're trying to say, that to use and say, I'm a Talmid Chacham, leave me alone, is much worse than even spending a huge sum of money, if you have the money.
So it really strengthens their point, because this guy had another way out.
Right, that's what they're saying. He could have gotten out some other way.
But
yeah.
I'm just thinking, if you take the story at its face value and somebody puts you in a sack, You're not
you're not exactly, forget about that, you're not exactly in a negotiating position. He could barely even hear you. I mean, obviously he heard him enough to hear him say Tarfon, right? It's also interesting, he doesn't say Rabbi Tarfon. The guy obviously must have known who Tarfon was, you know, he was famous. what?
You put in a sack, you plead for your life. Why are you doing this to me? You know, I can give you, you know, $100,000. Don't kill me.
Right, I guess so. I guess
well, maybe it's unbelievable that he's wealthy because he's picking figs. A strange field to identify.
Right, so he doesn't trust him when he says, I'll pay you all the money you want. He's not going to trust him.
Does it seem like a wealthy, what a wealthy
It also, you know, it's also about... how clear-headed you are at that point. You're about to get killed. You know, you're not really starting to think, okay, what are my options? And which is my best card to play? And what would be the least damaging to... Yeah. Okay, anyway, here you see. He made a decision and he regretted it. Right? And he struggled the rest of his life with it. At least according to what it says. Okay, Tanya. La'avat Hashem Elokecha lishmo b'kolo l'davka bo. Okay, pasuk from Dvarim. The end of Dvarim. Shelo yomar adam, what does it mean? Lishmo b'kolo l'davka bo, and to love God. What does it mean to love God? Shelo yomar adam ekra, shikruni chacham. Eshne, shikruni rebi. Eshanein, sheezakein ve'eshe b'yeshiva. Right? Don't have ulterior motives. I'll learn mikra so that they'll call me chacham. I'll learn mishnah so they'll call me rebi. Eshanein, you know, I'll repeat all everything I learned so that I'll be a zaken and they'll let me sit in the yeshiva. Ela lema me'ava v'sof ha'kavod lavo. Okay, learn from ahava, and in the end, the kavod will come. Shene'emar, kashrem al esbo'otecha kadvem aluach libecha. That's in Mishle, and also this one. Va'omer drachea drachei no'am, va'omer etz chaim hi l'machazik nima v'tumchea me'ushar. Okay, you will get it out of love, and it will become, it will bring you kavod in the end. It's interesting that in the end, they do talk about the kavod, right? It will bring you kavod, but don't, you know, like... Don't be rodef achar kavod. Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Tzadok Amar. Asei dvarim l'shem po'alam, v'daber bahem l'shmam. Okay, do them for the sake of your creator. V'daber bahem l'shma, right, for their sake, not for your own sake. Al ta'asem atara l'hitgadel bahem. Don't make them into a crown for you to be great upon, you know, make yourself look great because of them. Va'al ta'asem, this we learned the other day, al ta'asem kordom liyot oderbo. This means don't use it to make money out of it, as a money-making thing. V'kal v'chomer, uma bal shetzar shalom neshtemesh ele b'klei kodesh shenasu klei chol ne'akar min ha'olam, same source as before, ameshtemesh b'kitra shal Torah, alach ha'kama b'kama. Amar Rabbi, sharele le'inish lo duye nafshe ba'atra de lo yadele. Okay, now here we say, if you go to a place where nobody knows you, you're allowed to say who you are. Dichtiv, va'avdecha yireet Hashem minu'urav. Do you remember the Ovadia with Achav? Achav go, Eliyahu comes to Achav's house and he meets Ovadia on the way, right, the Eved, and he says, I'm a yireet Hashem minu'urav. He identifies who he is and what his strengths are, right? He's trying to say, don't kill me, I'm with you, right? I'm on your team. So if you go to a place where people don't know you, you're allowed to identify who you are. Okay, because there's this balance between wanting, right, this is what the whole daf is talking about. Are you allowed to kind of identify yourself as who you are? Or is that considered l'shemesh b'kitra shel Torah? Like Ovadia was doing the same thing. He was trying to save himself. He didn't want to get killed with Achav and all his people. He knew what Eliyahu was coming for. So El Akasha to Rabbi Tarfon. They say, wait, but that creates a problem for Rabbi Tarfon. So they answer, Da'ashir gadol hava v'haylei l'faisei b'damin. In other words, Ovadia didn't have a choice. This was his only way out. Whereas Rabbi Tarfon had a different way out, and therefore he should have used it. That's how they answer the question. Rava Rami Ktiv. Rava raises a contradiction here. V'avdecha yireet Hashem minu rav, uchtiv yehalel chazar velo picha. Ovadia identified himself to Eliyahu. But it says in another place, yehalel chazar velo picha. I assume this is Mishle. I didn't check. Sounds like Mishle. Right, that you should have a czar say sing your praises, someone else, and you should not sing your own praises. So haba atra diadele, haba atra de lo yadele. Okay, it depends. If you're in a place where no one knows you and there's no one who can sing your praises, then you can do it yourself. But if you're in a place where people know you, then you can't say anything about yourself.
Except to say something, yeah. This reminds me a lot, and probably everybody can relate to when you make Aliyah and nobody knows you. And you know, I remember thinking, how much can you say about yourself? Because you're starting over.
That's great. Yeah. Right. Right. Good comparison, Sherry, to making Aliyah and coming and being like a nobody when you know, were a big somebody there and you come here, you're a nobody and you have to start from scratch and build up. Exactly. And how do you do that? It's a very, this issue is a very relevant issue, how you know, the struggles here. You know, the two, like showing the two sides. Amar Rava, Share le Tzorva Mirabanan, le Meimar Tzorva Mirabanan Ana. Talmid Chacham's allowed to say, I'm a Tzorva Mirabanan, Share li Tigray Beresha. Okay, put my, I forgot how this, right, my judgment should come before other people's judgments. Do you remember that case, by the way, we saw at the end of Ketubot with the guy who, they moved his judgment up earlier and they ended up, I forgot what happened, but it went to bad, it went to a very bad place. They pushed his judgment forward because he, oh, no, he had said that some
else.
Rabbi helped me, and they thought he was related to him, and they thought, mm-hmm. and in the end he wasn't, and they put his deen first. So you see here the Talmidei Chachamim got put first. In the end he wasn't really a Talmidei Chacham, and he didn't belong there. But okay, so how do we know this? V'kohen menalan dechtiv v'kidashto ki lechem Elohecha hu makriv. Okay, the Kohen goes first. Oh, sorry, I skipped a line. That's why. Sharolei Tigra Bereisha, Dichtiv. Ubnei Davi Kohanim Ayu. Okay, it says the Bnei Davi were Kohanim. Ma Kohen Notel Barosh, Afta Michacham Notel Barosh. Okay, so now Bnei Davi were obviously not Kohanim. Right? David was not a Kohen. He was from Shevi Yehuda. So what they're trying to say is they were treated like Kohanim. Just like Kohanim get first, also the Talmidei Chachamim get first. Okay, v'kohen menalan, how do you know the kohenim get first? Dechtiv v'kidashto, ki alechem elohecha hu makriv. V'tana deber Rabbi Yishmael, here's the source for something we all know, v'kidashto, l'chol davar shebikdusha, l'ftoach rishon, u'levarech rishon, v'litom anay yafeh rishon. Okay, he gets to open first. Okay, what does that mean? Most Mepharshim say it's to read the Torah first, right? First aliyah. L'varech rishon. Okay, some people say any bracha, like if you have a brachat motzi to say, the kohen should do it, right? We don't do that generally, but we do, he's the mizamein, right? V'litol manaya farishon, okay? If there's, once it's split up equally, he should get the first portion. Amar Rava, sharele l'tzorvim rabbanan l'meimar, lo yehivna akarga, dichtiv, I just want to pronounce these right. I'm looking here. Minda v'lo v'halach lo shalit l'mirme alehom. Okay, this is in Ezra. Okay, the beginning of the pasuk is ulahom modiin. Okay, they're modiin. Dikol kahana v'levia. Okay, all the kohanim v'levim, etc. Okay, upalche beit eloha. They work in the beit eloh, right? They do the avodah, the rituals in the house of God. They are patur from all these different taxes. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Minda Zom Manat HaMelech. That's like a special king's tax. That's once in a blue moon. The king says, we need a tax, right? It's like the Hetel Ti'ul in Ranana. Okay, all of a sudden it comes out of the blue. Oh, yeah, we need money for this. Velo Zo Kesef Gulgalta. Okay, that's the head tax, right? For every head, Gulgolet, skull. Vehalach Zo Arnona. Okay, Arnona is not our Arnona, property tax. Arnona, okay, actually, the Koran says where it comes from, the source for it. It's either, it's a work tax that people have to work. You have to, you know, give hours to the government, or their animals need to work. Okay, that's what the original Arnona was.
This is Arnona is Greek for meal.
This one is
for what?
A meal, the king's meal.
Oh, really? Oh, that's not what it says in the Koran.
Was livestock.
The Koran says it comes from
Latin.
The Latin, what was the word?
Arnona. This refers to a levy of forced labor on behalf of the rulers for the purpose of public works or for the military.
Mm-hmm.
And then at times, work animals were confiscated, like those big vans here.
Exactly, confiscation of minivans.
Either for a fixed period of time or indefinitely. Mm-hmm. The Arnona was often enforced in order to sustain armies moving from place to place who relied on the local population for food and care of their animals. Mm-hmm.
This is relying for to feed the king on his travels.
Okay.
But in the same, it's the same.
Right, it's the same idea. So basically,
people moving through your town.
Right. So these are different taxes. So here it's interesting. They're saying these taxes, the Tzorva Merabanan could say, right, here's a way you can identify yourself as a Talmid Chacham in order to basically prevent yourself from paying taxes, right? This obviously can go to dangerous places, taking something like
totally
this.
It doesn't totally make sense that it would be the melech, because you already have menat melech. So it has to be different than...
That's the head tax as opposed to feeding him when he's traveling.
Then what's
well, feeding him when he's traveling is different than... That's a constant tax. The menat melech is a one-time tax that, you know...
But you also have
needs
minda,
money for something else.
They have to be
right.
Three different things.
That's the land tax, which is what we would think of as our nona.
No, but nobody says it's a land tax.
Not, that they say it's the
okay, anyway, let's go on because we're out of time. Okay.
Land tax there.
Okay, that's what you said.
It says land tax? Okay, so it's not the way they explain it in all the places. Anyway, okay. Different explanations of the three different types of taxes. Ba'amar Rava, Shari Le Letzorva Merabana Lemeimar Avda Denura Ana. He could say, I'm a fire worshiper. Lo Yahivna Akarga. My Taima, Lavruche Arya Mineikam. Okay, this is interesting. He can actually lie to the government to say he's a worshiper of the fire in order not to pay taxes. Why? Because it's like chasing a lion off of him. Okay, this is a very difficult sugya, how you relate to this in terms of tax evasion and things like that. Rav Ashi Havalei Ahu Abba, Ahu Abba, right, Abba is, oh right, he had a forest. Zavne Lebeinura, he sold it to someone who worships the fire. Amar Le Ravina Le Rav Ashi, now we're getting into a totally different issue. We're just talking about these people who worship the fire. Ravina says to Rav Ashi, "Ha'ika lifnei iver lo titein mechshol." Isn't there lifnei iver lo titein mechshol? Because you sold this forest that they're going to use to burn to their avodah zara. Amar le rovitzim lahasakan itnu. Most people buy itzim for fire to make fire for kindling. So you don't have to worry that the ones you sell him, he's going to use for that. And this is a very interesting. Okay, we're way at the end of our time. But anyway, I thought I'd get through the next Mishnah, but at least we got to hear. It's very interesting question as to what this means in terms of Lifnei Iver, you know, and how you, and the question is, what is it Rovitzim? What if the Ran says, very interestingly, he says, V'kol hecha di'ika lemitle talinan. If there's any way you can say, maybe he'll use this for something else, which doesn't sound like the Pshat here. The Pshat sounds like, if it's the majority of Eitzim were used for this, then you don't have to worry that he's going to use it for that. But the Ran takes it much farther, and he says, as long as there's some option that maybe he'll use it for kindling, that's enough. And then you're patur from Lifnei Iver, and it's his issue. Why is there Lifnei Iver with a non-Jew? Because it's Bnei Noach, and it's Bnei Noach or Mitzuveh in Avodah Zarah. So, which shows you that what? That Lifnei Iver also applies to Bnei Noach. In other words, to everybody when it comes to Mitzvah Bnei Noach. So really, I mean, that one line, there's so much you could do with that. But anyway, we'll end here. Okay. Everybody have Shabbat Shalom and a meaningful fast.
This is the Gemara on the ATT.